Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
I am so excited about today's guest. She is a broadcast presenter known for Inside the Factory on BBC. She's done loads of documentaries, one of my favourites being 10 Years Younger on Channel 5. And she also helps women harness and hone their own power with her manifesting course. And arguably, her most important role is that she is the mother of two, to Coco and Edward Allen. And one thing that I need to say who you are first. It's Cherry Healy. I get so excited to talk to you. I forget to say your name.
That's fine. How are you? Everything else is more important. And I got three cats. That's me in a nutshell. That's it. Done. Boom. I'm really
three
well.
Cats.
Three cats. We've got a full house. It feels really good. I've turned 41 last year. Well, December. And it feels like I've really put my roots down, which is a lovely feeling, actually. I've always been a bit of a free spirit and very independent. But yeah, hearing you say all of that is really interesting. It's interesting when someone tells you back your life, but it feels good. I'm really, I feel settled.
Do you know what? It's so interesting because I thought I fully expected to be childless by choice. And also I was single until I was 32. And I did loads of research into this sort of expectation or pressure or idea that you're left on the shelf if you haven't found someone by your late 20s. And if you reached the age of 23 in France and you weren't married, you were dubbed a spinster or a Catherinette. And this all goes back obviously to biologically, we were made to be baby makers. And do you know what? There's all this really interesting research that I don't actually have now about the outdated statistics. So we say to women, you know, you'll struggle to get pregnant in your 30s, let's say, but apparently, actually, I do have the statistic. The source of this data is on French birth between the years 2670 to 1830. So antibiotics, electricity and fertility treatments were yet to be invented, but yet we still have this sort of baby panic. And we still have this notion that we are going to be left on the shelf. And I've had conversations with my friends. And to be honest, I felt like this at moments of my singledom, even though I was loving my life. And I actually didn't feel I was lacking at all for not having a boyfriend. But when I would like date these assholes, I remember thinking, should I just settle? I'm getting older now. Maybe I should just settle for a nice guy. And don't get me wrong, nice guys are great, but you have to be attracted to them. So I was thinking, like, I'll just pick anyone and then I had to like stop myself and also really question, like, why do I feel the need to be saved? Why do I feel the need to be saved? Like, I'm independent, I'm earning money. Unlike women before the 1970s, I can buy a house if I have the money. I can open a bank account. That all of the reasons that we used to need to settle down, and social shame is actually something that I really want to get onto.
Oh, social shame. What do you mean by social shame? What area? I mean, for a woman, which one do you want to pick, Ashley?
I know. So one of the reasons I'm so excited to talk to you, and actually it's so timely because this weekend I spent with my friend Vicky, who's been on my podcast before. She chose to adopt on her own. She just turned 40. It was a really long process and she is a single parent. And interestingly, this morning I am not proud of myself, but I opened the Daily Mail app and there was a story about Lauren Goodger getting pregnant, not someone I know, I think I have met her a few times and she's actually a really lovely girl, but she has just announced that she's pregnant with her second child, and her partner, who is the baby daddy and the baby daddy of the new baby, cheated on her 2 weeks ago. And yeah. I was just like, I'm really interested, because I find myself judging women a lot and then stopping myself and thinking, why am I judging? So I did what you should never do. And I looked in the Daily Mail comments out of curiosity, and not one comment was there any sympathy towards her, but it was all this whole shame around the fact that she will be a single mom. And I thought, why, like, single women, single mothers or single fathers, they are superheroes. And why do we focus the shame on the women who stay to raise the children?
Oh, such an important question, such an important point. So I got divorced about 9 years ago. No woman gets divorced without giving it a pretty bloody good long think. I knew that it was going to upset the apple cart immensely. I knew it was going to upset family. I knew it was going to upset friends. It took me 5 years to make the decision. And when I say 5 years, I mean the last 2 years, obsessively thinking about it. I'd be in a yoga class and everyone would be like all peaceful. And I'd be thinking, can I leave? Should I leave? I really need to leave. I can't leave. You mustn't leave. I must leave. I can't have this life. You mustn't leave. A manic brain like I've never experienced.
You were a mum at this point.
I was a mum. I knew the relationship wasn't right for him and it wasn't right for me. There wasn't any disarray. There wasn't crazy arguing. There was just no passion. It wasn't right for either of us. Honestly, I don't want to speak to him for him, but for me, it definitely wasn't the future that I wanted. But after a long, long time of weighing it up, I knew I had to. I knew I couldn't also, I couldn't live with that kind of dialogue in my brain. So we got a divorce. It was incredibly heartbreaking. It was incredibly difficult emotionally, spiritually, logistically. Now, he's an amazing dad. He's a great dad. I'm so lucky. He's a divine person. I get on really well with him. But you know what? Some women have to make that decision, and they also have to decide, well, I'm going to be on my own financially. And how, I can't imagine how much harder that decision must be. I mean, 10 times harder than the one I had to make. The respect I have for those women knows no bounds. The bravery to say, I'm going to have to do all of this, and then I'm going to have no financial stability and no help with the kids. Those women are goddesses. Now, Ashley, you said that you judge people. God damn, I judge people. I judge people all day long. Everyone does. And yes, everyone every so often clicks onto the Daily Mail. It's not, I don't like doing it either, but every so often it just happens. Well, I make the choice to, because I'm weak. But if anyone says that misogyny is not alive and well, you go and have a look at the Daily Mail comments. And the reason they're so interesting to look at as a research piece is they are truthful, because people at work, they know that if they say something misogynistic to a woman, they will get fired. If they say something misogynistic to me, they're going to get an earful, because that's how it is when you do direct communication. The comments in the Daily Mail are people's like subconscious stream, and they're unchecked. And I judge women, of course, actually, but like you, I question myself forensically all the time. And I hope that as I do that, my little judgment gremlins get smaller and smaller, and I beat them with a stick. And I think I love that you do that. And I love that that's the kind of woman that you are, that A, you admit, look, we can all be racist, sexist, prejudiced. We can all be that all day long, because that's the society we've grown up in. The difference between the people I want to hang out with and the people I really don't, the people who admit it and say, I'm really going to try to do better. I'm going to try and rectify my mistakes. But the Daily Mail comments, there should be some kind of billboard that in Leicester Square where they all get posted with their full name and address. I mean, those comments are disgusting. And there are some women who actually go and read them. God help them, take their phones away, because they'll break your heart, really.
I used to, funnily enough, when I was catapulted into this industry through reality TV, which where you literally go from being, I don't want to say a no one, because everyone is a someone worthy of, but in terms
not
of
known like by other people, yeah,
the industry and knowing how the industry works, I went from nobody knowing me and talking about me to everyone knowing and talking about me for that short period of time that I was on it. And I remember reading the Daily Mail comments, and it was also before I was wise enough to not, I was a people pleaser. So reading horrible things about me, I was thinking, how can I change to prove that I am not that person? And eventually I stopped, but obviously it was still a novelty to my family as well. And I remember my mum ringing me up, being like, "Ashley," my parents are Geordie, just for context. Like, why? She was like, "Ashley, I can't believe what people are saying about you. They're saying you're a beach wheel. How are you a beach wheel?" And I thought, do you know what? This is actually like alarming to me that I was a size 8, probably a size 6, and I was considered a beach whale. I was like, what? I mean, and they were probably some of the kinder comments that came out. But it's interesting, isn't it? Because we all still judge.
Also, if you think that we've got this funny dichotomy of, you say you're a people pleaser. Well, think about the whole of the school institution. It's teaching children to be people pleasers. Look up, please and thank you. Yes, you know, you've got to mind about what people think. And that's how society works. Being a people pleaser is actually a very useful way to function in society. It's been conscientious. Like, my son is a real people pleaser, but I actually don't mind that about him. He really minds about people. He really minds about people being happy and nice. He'll ask people if they want a drink. He'll share his blanket. He's a really sweet little boy.
You're right. Being a people pleaser is a good thing, as long as you have boundaries.
But actually now, you're on the telly. Jim, Bob and Sue can see you. And so that people pleasing mechanism is spread out into the ocean. It's like, I want everyone. I do think that people who are on the telly or who do jobs for a public profile, there should be some kind of course. Do you think? Some kind of like online course that you can go, oh, here you go, you're on Made in Chelsea, you're on the news, you read the weather, here's a link to the online course telling you how not to give a shit about what Jill thinks. One of my favorite sayings is, what Helen thinks about my skirt is none of my business. I think because I was in production, I was a researcher and then an assistant producer going through television, I learned from the backstage, like peeping through the curtains, about how vile people can be to people on the telly. Because I was watching these girls get destroyed in front of my eyes. They'd come into the programme, lovely, shiny, excited, and they would leave broken. And so I think I had that. Because I'm incredibly sensitive, like a meerkat. Okay. I don't look at the comments. I only read reviews if they've been vetted by my family. They read me bad ones, but they don't read me ones that are full of vitriol. I don't care if they think I'm overweight or if they don't like my clothes. I'm really happy and I really love my life. And I put a little bubble over myself like this, and it's fucking bulletproof. It is absolutely bulletproof. And it's, some things get through, but you know, people go, oh, you should grow a thick skin. I don't want a thick skin. I have a really thin skin and I'm a really nice friend and I'm really fun to be around and I'm really happy. And that skin is going to stay nice and thin and flexible and empathetic. And I feel and I love and I care. And I think it's sad when these women get broken. You know, we have so many examples of how women stop being creative. They stop going for programs. They leave the industry. So we lose these beautiful creative spirits because they've been broken by dicks in the comments in the Daily Mail. People, by the way, are fucking angry and unhappy. They're angry and they're unhappy. And that, if you were writing in the Daily Mail comments, there is only one identity that you carry, and that is you're fucking ignorant and angry.
This is like such an off-tangent topic, but it's interesting because I had a conversation this weekend with my friend Vicky, who is a single parent to her amazing daughter. Like, the fact that, you know, she chose to be a single parent, she adopted, like, she is a superhero. And how anyone is able to parent on their own, especially as a woman having to face the pathetic shame and stigma and judgment. But she's now decided to like enter into the dating world. And she said to me, after somebody was obviously really rude about her circumstances, they're not interested because she's a single mom. And she said, oh, maybe I'm just too nice. And it's exactly what you're saying. It's like, but what is wrong with being nice? And being nice is a great thing. And I will get the saying wrong because that is literally what I do, especially since having a baby. I call myself Mrs. Malaprop, because if there's a phrase or saying, I will butcher it. But is there something, a saying like, just because you get one flat tire, don't put out the other three. Yeah. And just because that one person has really warped, outdated, judgmental views about the fact that you're a single parent and the fact that you have adopted, don't let him impact you on your kindness and your niceness, because actually you and your daughter will be a blessing to
absolutely
somebody.
I think that I've really found hugely helpful is to learn about the history of where it comes from. It's almost like you smash this illusion that they're right. So it's really historical. I'm sure people already know this, but I found it really interesting. So in the Victorian ages, when women were vibrant, when they talked a lot, when they didn't want to get married or they didn't want children, they did anything that wasn't just being a nice, quiet baby making factory that cooked and cleaned and facilitated a man's life, like staff. You were staff. If you didn't want to be staff, and this, I am really condensing a lot of things, but they just for kind of
I don't know this. I'm fascinated. I'm like, so,
this is really I'm abbreviating, of course. So if a woman was, she didn't want to be the maid essentially and facilitate her husband's life, then she would be given a hysterectomy. She would be given treatment. She was thought to be mentally unwell. And if you think about hysteria, I think it's connected to the Greek word. I think the Greek word is hysteria. And if you think about hysterectomy, so they would try and calm her down. And if a woman, by the same note, if a woman was decided to be a single parent, her children would be taken away from her. They'd be given to the father. There wouldn't even be a court case. It would just, that's what it happened. The children were the husband's property. They were shamed. They were put in workhouses. They were thought to be sinful. Every word that you could put on that mother. And that's because they wanted to keep the family unit together more than anything. And that was because of, well, religion and culture and everything came together. But everything to stop a woman breaking up the family home. And the reason I believe, this is just my hypothesis, but the reason for that is because I think the setup for women was so shit. So they had to put chains on women, because who wants to be a maid all their life? Who does? No one. So you have to then bash it into women that this is your life. This is your meaning. This is your value. And if you step out of that, you will go into a workhouse. You will die of poverty. You will be shamed. You will be thought of as a whore. You will have your hysterectomy. I mean, Ashley, what worse things could you say to a woman to lock her in her own home? It was chains. And so women didn't leave. Women didn't become single mothers. And if they did, it was not by their own choice often, because the consequences were so heinous. And this is a hangover from that. There is an anger in society when a woman decides to become a single parent. And if a woman decides to have a life and be happy after being a single mom, I mean, the rage. You're dating as a single mom. How can that be?
It's so interesting, because we moved into a house in Essex in the summer, and I found out recently that it actually used to belong to the nuns, where basically women who gave birth out of wedlock were all, you know, underage or whatever it was, were sent to this house to have their babies and then essentially get their babies taken.
It's like a mother and baby house. The mother and baby houses.
Ooh. Also, I thought, what a great fuck you to the history of this house that I am not a single parent, but I'm an unmarried woman living with her boyfriend and their bastard child. I was like, that is a great fuck you to history.
And really, like, beautiful and radiant and public and speaking out and talking about body. It's like you are infusing the house with a very different energy.
But I get such great energy from this house, you know, and so it was really like shocking to me when I found that out. But I like to think it's like, I don't know, all the
women. The house needs you, darling. The house needs you. It needs good. It needs fresh energy. And I'm sure there's lots of women who lived in it before you who have also done that work. But we need to speak out. And I think women doing wonderful things and feeling happy and maybe being single or unmarried or whatever it is, to say to the women below us, I don't give a shit if Jill or Steve carry on for the rest of their lives thinking that women are women of the night if they're unmarried. Oh God, well, she got divorced again. I really don't care. They can sit and read their papers and eat their croissant, are fine, live their life. I want the women after us to not be scared. I don't want women in their 20s who are 25 who got married early thinking, I'm going to stay in this awful marriage that I shouldn't have done, because I don't want to be a single mum. You don't want to be a single mum. Being a single mum is really great. Yes, there's logistical difficulties in it, but I tell you what, it's way better than being in an unhappy marriage. Like, different league better.
For me, it's really interesting, and I've always thought this, because obviously I was single and didn't want children up until into my 30s. And I've thought a lot about the milestones that we really celebrate in life. I have a friend going through a divorce now, although she doesn't have children. But it's so interesting that we put so much celebration. And by the way, this isn't a diss to anyone who, of course, has babies or gets married, because I think things that make people happy are wonderful, like follow what makes you happy. But what I have issue with is the fact that we celebrate those things so much above other things, which is also why I think people maybe are more likely to make the wrong decisions, because who doesn't want to get those celebrations? Who doesn't want to put up a picture saying, I said yes, or whatever that kind of meme is, because you want validation and you want a celebration and you want a party. And I remember I bought a house on my own, and even, you know, career highlights, and there was no celebration and there was no gift list, and there was no, I remember even being bitter about going to weddings and stuff. Like, I have to pay for myself. Like, I mean, I was a proper Scrooge about it, and I've grown and I've learned and I'm happy for everyone now. But I think we should have like huge divorce parties, because you're, like, of course, it's traumatic and stuff, but what strength to get divorced. And,
going back to what
you were saying about your own judgments, you judge single women because you used to judge single women. And that, I think, is a huge light bulb moment for me, because, and I talk about my prejudgments of mums before I became one. And I think, you know, even when I came, when I became pregnant, and I cringe now and I see other people doing it, because we all have this, well, not we all, but a lot of us have this preconceived idea, like even the word mumsy, like we have a preconceived idea about what it is to be a mum, and we judge people. And then we come to the other side and we're so paranoid, which is also part of like the mum identity, which a lot of this podcast is about, like finding who the fuck I am again, because I've got all of me who I was before and the judgments about being a mum. And then I've got me as a mum, and I'm like, well, which fucking one am I? And it's because
it's really difficult. I think if you, like you say, like before I became a single mum, I didn't know, I didn't think that I judged single mums. But then when I became a single mum and I started to be terrified and paranoid about what people thought of me without them even having to speak, you know, I thought, God, where is this coming from? And I was like, oh, it's me. Now, not all of it. Lots of people did judge me, and I could, you know, and society has done some shocking things about perception of women. You know, I remember David Cameron, when all the riots were happening, saying, oh, it's those boys with single mums at home. Oh my God.
No, he did not.
No, he did. The only reason that there may have been a link is because statistically there are more single mums in families of lower income. But that because the reasoning of that is so complicated and so nuanced, I'm not going to go into now. But the fact that he linked those tells me what an ignorant man he is. And I think Margaret Thatcher, she said that children were better off with adopted parents than with their single mother. So these are not old. These are not old. This happened relatively recently. So this is, we are breaking the stigma. And in terms of identity, this is why podcasts, and the more the merrier, and content, and YouTube, this is why this content is still so powerful and needed, because we are breaking, you are breaking a stigma that is still there. And when growing up, did I ever hear a conversation between two women about being a single parent and having a wonderful life? Like, I love my life, I'm really happy, but the image portrayed of single mothers and mothers was not celebratory, I don't think.
Well, I found the portrayal of being a mum was almost so rosy and glossy. I mean, people say that social media glosses over motherhood, but for me, I feel that whenever we are open about the challenges of motherhood, we are shot down with, you should be grateful, don't be negative. And I even said it.
I'm questioning you, because you say it was all rosy, and I agree with you. It was rosy in that it was all shiny and nice. But I looked at that as a kid and I thought, that's terrifying to me. That is that idea that all you do as a woman is you turn into this robot. You turn into this, like, smiling, slightly dead inside. Here's the food on the table. Here's the food on the table. Here's the laundry done. Here's the laundry done. Are you okay? That woman, it's like she gets switched. She switches off herself and she's all about caring for other people. It's like she's not allowed to have her own interests or her own power or her own fun. And so I agree. The portrayal of that was wrong in two ways. A, you don't see clearing up the shit and being tired. You don't see the reality of being a parent, but you also don't see the reality of being a woman. It's incredibly robotic. I just want to make another point, because you made such a good point about celebration. And I think really I want to talk about that, because just for a second, because we are ritualistic beings. We like rituals. We're spiritual, emotional, and physical. We need physical things. And that's why we need rites of passage. You know, when we were living as a one collective unit, we would have rites of passage. When you became a woman, there'd be some kind of mark. And when a woman started her period, we don't anymore. It's just kind of slightly strange, awkward conversation you have with your mum at best. And then someone puts some sanitary pads.
God, well, I was at boarding school and we had a tea party.
Did you really?
Yeah, I remember going to knock on the matron. I mean, this is how old school our boarding school was. But yeah, I knocked on Matey's door and she was like, oh, darling, lovely, go get the girls. And then we kind of had a semi-lesson about periods. But bear in mind, I still did not know that we had a third hole. So when she gave me tampons, I remember going with my friend Lucy Brown, she was called. We literally had our legs together. And we were like, where is this mysterious third hole? And I remember, like, I think I tried to put the tampon up my bum and I was like, no, it's not that one. And then like into my wee hole. And I was like, what? And so yeah, we've got a long way to go, but we did have a celebration.
Oh my God, I went to boarding school too. And I think we all sat on beanbags and ate toast and Marmite outside in the common room.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Paranormal Activity with me, Yvette Fielding, a brand new podcast bringing together people's real ghost, extraterrestrial, and paranormal stories, as well as getting some inside details from those who study the supernatural. I'll be listening through your paranormal stories every week and try to understand them, as well as chatting about my own encounters with an occasional paranormal investigator too. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts from, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Acast. Just search for Paranormal Activity with Yvette Fielding.
I grew up never really feeling particularly maternal, but always presuming I would get married and have children in the future. Mm. So I think, you know, when I was 16, I was like, I'll get engaged at 26 and I'll have my first baby at 27 and I'll do that. But you forget that, number one, finding a compatible partner is like the main thing of it. But it was always in the future. And then it was only when I kind of, you know, met Tom and he really wanted children. And it almost like scared me, because I was like, well, actually, even I'll say this, even when I found out I was pregnant, I rang my friend Jackie. And when she was like, it was a surprise pregnancy. I remember being like, oh my God, it's locked down. Like, what am I going to do about this? And she was like, you know that you can have the baby. And I was like, but I'm too young. And she was like, you're 33. And I was like, and I think it's because in my head, it was always, I'll do it in the future, because it never quite felt right in the moment. It's so funny. Jackie, you're 33 years old.
You haven't, you know, dreamed. Oh, I had a surprise pregnancy when I was 28 with Coco. And I think, had I not got surprised pregnant, I would have been exactly the same as you. I was really happy in my television career. I was an assistant producer. I'd worked incredibly hard to get there. Absolutely loved it. And there was no way would I have got pregnant by planning it for a very, very, very long time. And it was a really happy mistake. And I absolutely loved her dad. And so it was a really, I was like, go on. But I absolutely shit my pants. I was listening. I found out in a disabled loo in Westfield, in Shepherd's Bush. And I was listening to Usher at the time. And I didn't even turn it. I didn't think I was pregnant. I just was like, oh, my boobs feel massive. I feel a bit sick. So I went into that. I've never done a pregnancy test in my life. And I don't know why I did it. I just did it. Shit. And I remember with my earbuds in, just looking at it, and Usher like banging away.
These are my confessions.
Yeah. And I called my friend Ellie and I walked around Westfield and I swore I'm all the way from Topshop to Zara. Just swore. And she went, fuck. And then I remember saying to her, I just don't feel ready. And she said, you know, you love him and you want him to be with him for the rest of your life. You could do this. And I remember thinking, yeah, I'm actually not too young. But if you haven't grown up wishing for it and begging for it, it hits you like a train. It hits you like an absolute train. I don't think anyone, well, some people
feel ready. What's the age gap between Coco and Edward?
It's 4 years. And I think, again, I'd put off having another baby for a while because the first one had been such a shock. Although, I have to say, the minute she came out, I was madly in love. I absolutely love being a mum. I absolutely love it. It's going to be really, really difficult at times. The difficulty is nothing to do with them. The difficulty is to do with logistics. But I absolutely love being with them. But then when I had Bear, we planned it in a much more kind of conscious way, and it was really calm and really lovely. And I liked the age gap. I really love the age gap because I feel like Coco and I had 4 years when it was just us. I don't do well with chaos. I like calm and peace. And so it allowed me to have a really peaceful 4 years with Coco. And then Bear came around and she was a little bit older and then she was going to school. So it was all just manageable. Although they're not wildly close. I mean, they're nice to each other, but not wildly close. So I sometimes, you know, there's a bit of a payoff there, I think.
Because it's really interesting because obviously Alf is now, well, over one, which feels mad to say, like, where has the year gone? Like the fact I'm a mum of a one-year-old. But I keep thinking, like, would I want him to be an only child? Am I able to do it again, like, as in biologically, yeah, but also, like, the mental, physical, everything? Like, can I do that again? And Tommy has three siblings and there's 4 years between all of them as well. And probably similar to what you're saying, that, you know, they're really close, but there's always been an age gap.
The age gap gets smaller as you get older, I think.
Yeah, for sure. But then I think I always said, if I ever have children, I want 1 year between. But obviously I didn't even like do the maths about that. I was like, I mean, I've still had stitches, but, you know, And even when I find out that people have babies really soon after, and don't get me wrong, again, this is like no judgment and I'm delighted, especially because I know a lot of friends with fertility issues who've managed to have children straight after. And I think that's wonderful. But I remember thinking, like, how are they even having sex yet? Like, oh my God.
I know. I think there's real like pros and cons of both, but I have really loved having the age gap because I really feel like I had that lovely time with Coco. It was also meant that I recovered mentally as well. Like I started to really feel like myself again. And that was important for me because I wonder for me, if I'd left it too long, I loved that I got to find myself again. I started going out with my friends. I started wearing my old clothes. You know, I'm not talking in size of size, but in terms of, you know, when you go out on the town and you wear like wildly impractical things and you go and have fun. So I started to feel like myself now. I loved the balance between finding myself and being a mom. And I really like sunk into that and was like, oh, okay, this is what the gang is. This is what the new dynamic is. I love this. And then, so when I had Bear, I had something to go back to. So obviously you lose your body again and you become, you know, that first 6 months of having a baby, really your life is so much about that baby, of course. But because I'd had time to find myself, it wasn't too distant a memory. So I do it again. So yeah, I also, people do say this and I found it to be true. Having Bear was so, so much calmer and so much, I think, easier for me. I just knew what I was doing. With Coco, when your first kid, it's like being picked up and put into a foreign country and someone goes, go on then, Have a laugh.
And also at the same time, dealing with all your like prejudgments. And also for me, I found it's also the lack of understanding. Like, I feel like when you're a mom, you're almost like put into a new world that you didn't even know existed. You kind of thought you knew, but you had no idea. And so also a lot of like my friendships changed. And I've always said, like, I get it, because I apologized to so many of my friends who were mums once I became one, because I was like, oh my God, I didn't ask you anything. Like, why didn't I come around and let you nap? Like, and I've got a friend that does it now. She's like, how's Alf? Anyway, what else is new? And I'm like, no, there's literally nothing else. Like, this has been it. Now there's starting to be else. But there wasn't else. And she never really asked. And I was taking that personally. But then I was like, but I didn't before I knew. And some people are really good. Like, I've got friends who don't have children and don't want children, and they're great with him. But in general, massively generalizing, it's just that you enter into this new world and dynamics change.
It's true. How many times do people say when you're pregnant, they were like, oh my God, and I've done this. Exactly. Oh my God, I'm so going to come and babysit. Obviously, no one speaks like that, but... How many of your friends, if you caught them on a Friday night, you'd be like, so can you not? One, again, generalization, some people would be there, but I wouldn't even call them. I'd be like, go and live your life, go and do your thing. Like, I offered it to people, and I don't think I've ever babysat for a friend's child even once. And then when you become a mum, it's too late, because you need it.
I actually thought to myself after spending the weekend with Vicky, my amazing single mum, that I was like, I need to actually give out vouchers. You know how, like, on Valentine's Day when you're a teenager, you give like sex vouchers or favour vouchers, whatever they are. Like, I owe you one blowjob. I owe you. Like, that's what we need to do for parents. Like,
we actually do.
What gift? I owe you one day nap. I owe you a babysitting. And I remember when I was in the grips of sleep deprivation, and it was on this podcast, so people listening have been through it with me, and Alf was waking up every 30 minutes for a good like months and months. And I only just feel now that I'm starting to get my sanity back. But I remember a friend messaging me, like, sending hugs. And I remember being like, fuck your hugs. I want you to come over and let me nap. What good are virtual hugs? Also, I want a physical hug. Like,
also, do you know what? I want sleep. I can't eat a hug. Bring me a lasagna and take the baby out for 2 hours. Take the baby out for 2 hours.
Cooked meals. That needs to come in the checkbook. We need to go to Anne Summers.
I think you need to do like an online portal where people can say, right, this is what I'm going to do. Frozen lasagna and a hug.
Fuck your virtual hug.
Fuck you.
We can do that for divorces as well, like a little checkbook of like, while you get your life back together, here's the checkbook, I'm here.
Yes.
Cash it in.
Here's 50 quid because you may need some childcare because you know I'm not living with another adult. Here's £30 for Deliveroo when you feel really sad and you don't know what the hell you're like. And the brilliant writer Amy Poehler, she's this brilliant comedian, she wrote in her book, getting a divorce is like getting every single thing you own and then just chucking it in the air. And then you slowly over the course, I think it takes 2 years. That's what she said in her book. That's how I found it. My godmother said to me it would take 2 years. I reckon it's 2 years on the nose where you suddenly feel like, oh, my life is back. My life is my own. And I feel like I'm home again. But I think £50 delivery vouchers, this is actually, you've got to do this. You've got to do that for new mums as well. Nap vouchers.
God, I feel like this is a great thing. Vouchers. The sad thing is that we shouldn't really have business meetings on a podcast because now it's open to everyone. Unless I trademark this before this podcast is released.
We are the worst entrepreneurs ever.
I really hope, by the way, that somebody does this business. And please, if you do this business, like, let us know that it's because of this conversation, because I think it's brilliant. Cherry, I feel like I could talk to you for ages. Sometimes I've forgotten that I'm even doing a podcast. Every week I basically read out a message from one of my listeners who gets in touch. And this one is from Erin, who I've not actually read in advance. So she got in touch on the email, which is askmumsthewordpod@gmail.com. And she said, hi, Ashley, I've just watched your stories from last night about overwhelm, anxiety. And although I did send you a DM when I saw your story about considering antidepressants, I'm sure you get inundated with DMs. And I really didn't want this to miss you in case no one has ever mentioned it to you. And like me, you had no idea it was even a thing. When I hear you speak about how you're feeling at the moment, it's honestly like looking at myself in the mirror.
without the great hair, by the way, ka-ching, not today, but thanks, a couple of months ago. And now I'm coming out the other side of it, and I've spoken to some professionals and done some research, and I really do believe the reduction and the stopping of breastfeeding my son massively impacted my mood. This is so interesting because obviously I'm a bit ahead now. I have stopped breastfeeding. But she said, in short, I had to call my husband home from work one day because I was so low and I was worried he wouldn't make it through the afternoon live until he got home at dinner time. I know that's a big statement. It still scares me to say it, but I do have a better understanding of these intrusive thoughts now with the hormone imbalance of stopping breastfeeding. And I was given tablets to dry my milk up, which I think just pushed me over the edge. I believe the gradual drop in hormones, as Will fed less, just slowly, slowly dragged me further and further down. Looking back now, it's easy to see how it was all connected. But what I did want to say, as well as raising awareness of PWD, which is post-weaning depression, it does get easier. I actually said to my husband yesterday that this week Will has made being a parent so fun and enjoyable. And although, yes, I feel bad, I didn't always feel like that before. It's just the truth. Anyway, if you've made it this far, I really do hope you're okay. Go easy on yourself, and sending you a big awkward hug. I hope this message has helped you and others who are going through the same. Erin, what? Thank you, by the way, so much for writing such a long message. But it's so interesting that I'm reading this now because I hadn't read it in advance. And I, in the last week or 2 weeks, have stopped breastfeeding. And I feel more like myself. And this is not, you know, everybody knows how much I love breastfeeding. So please, this is not to put anyone off or anything, because I'm so proud of the journey. But I didn't know about post-weaning depression. And I suppose there is an element of like enjoying my autonomy. You know, I'm not having to get dressed in the morning thinking like, can I get my boob out in this? But not too much that society will judge me for having my boobs out. Like, there's a lot that's going on as someone with big boobs. Now I just get dressed, and if it's cold, I put on whatever I want to put on to protect myself from the cold. And I don't have to think about someone on my boobs all the time. And it is like the first time, like hearing you say it, you know, it took a while to get over that like initial shock of motherhood. And I genuinely am starting to feel like I'm loving Alf. I feel like I've got my ducks in a row more, that whether, like, you know, with childcare, to be able to get my work done. So then when I'm with him, I'm not thinking I need to be doing my work and feeling guilty about it. And I am actually starting to enjoy it. And that's why, like, God help me, I'm asking you about what it's like to have a second child. And then I have to be like, whoa, just enjoy getting to see your friends again.
Because you've sorted your shit out. And I think it's funny, it takes a while to sort your shit out. It really does, because it's like an atom bomb. That was really interesting, the email, but I really didn't get on with breastfeeding at all. I really thought I would do it. I thought I'd do it easily. I've got quite big boobs as well. I suppose I just, for some reason, I thought that would mean that I would breastfeed easily. It was a nightmare. I was back in hospital with Coco. I got mastitis so badly, I didn't know what it was. So I just kept on trying to breastfeed. And then I got taken into A&E and they kept me in there for 5 days and pumped me full of antibiotics. And I was very, very, very unwell. And then I stopped after that and I pumped. And I absolutely started to love being a mum immediately after that. It wasn't for me. I cried every time she breastfed. It was a nightmare, actually. It was an absolute nightmare. With Bear, I gave it another go because I knew a lot more. And I knew when to spot mastitis. I got antibiotics really quickly. So it wasn't as miserable, but I only did it for 2 months. I'm really glad I did it for 2 months. But then when I stopped, again, you have a lot more freedom. Although I did enjoy it more. I think it's so baby dependent, but my God, it's not always easy.
And I think that's great. You know, like, I wish people didn't feel guilt about their choice to breastfeed or not, because it's not for everyone. And like you said, you got dread when you tried to breastfeed Bear, and I had the opposite. I was worried about stopping because I was like, will I still like this? Because it was really the only bit of it I loved at the beginning, or throughout, you know, especially when I was feeling low. I was like, at least I can look at my baby and my boobs. And I also felt, as someone who's always had big boobs and always had that like sort of judgment or comments, you know, stop seeking attention, or being made to feel like my body was this like sexual asset that I had to cover up if I wanted to be taken seriously, that suddenly it was almost like I felt like I was reclaiming my body in a maternal way, which was the opposite. And I just think, I wish society knew how hard it was for women to breastfeed. So A, people didn't feel the need to carry on if it wasn't working for them, because everybody knows that. Well, I wish more people knew the health benefits so they could make educated decisions, but also that they had the support that they didn't have to stop if they didn't want to. Yes. That's number one. But I also wish people understood how consuming it was, so that we didn't have to deal with like ignorant comments around like women should cover up, women should stay in the house. It's attention seeking to breastfeed in public. It's like, do you want someone just to live in their home for a year? Like, you, I don't think people quite realize how consuming it is. And go, even like the psychology of it, like having to get dressed to be able to have easy access to your boobs, having to give up your body and also using your body in a different way, because like boobs are seen as sexual. So whether you want that or not, and also getting to enjoy like boobs and sex. Like now, if Tom goes anywhere near my nipples, I'm like, get off my udders. I don't think I'll ever go back to like enjoying.
Yeah, you will. Yeah, you will. It's a coming. I've been following your breastfeeding journey really closely because I find that really fascinating. And I love that you've been so open about it. And every time you do those posts, I'm just saluting you from afar. And I was happy for you when, I know quite recently you said that you were stopping, only because I felt like, God, how do I know? But I did think, oh, you've made your own decision based on your individual circumstance. I really felt like you had made that decision for yourself and hadn't been pushed into it. And that's why I was so happy for you that you made that decision. Because breastfeeding, I mean, I made a documentary about breastfeeding called Is Breast Best? And no documentary has caused more vitriol and horrendous comments than that documentary. It's this amazing war between people who really think that they want the choice, and then people who think that people shouldn't have the choice. I wish someone had told me about mixed feeding, because that really changed my life. So Bear, I was able to breastfeed Bear for 2 months, even though I have to find it really difficult because I mixed fed.
Is it called combi feeding? So you give like
combi feeding.
Yeah.
And that was really wonderful. So I could let my boobs have a rest. And then but it allowed me to breastfeed him for 2 months. And I know that's not a massively long time, but for me, considering how traumatized I was from Coco, that was really lovely. So it's funny because, you know, the NCT classes, did you do them?
I didn't do them, but I hear you.
I did a couple of them, and I maybe missed them, but I couldn't go to all the sessions. I was working. So I kind of wish they would do more on what happens after the birth. Like, you could get postnatal weaning, you know, all of these things. I think actually it's quite easy to put on a nappy. I want to know what happens after I've given birth.
Do you know what? It's so interesting because my pelvic health physiotherapist, Marta Kinsella, she's called, amazing, amazing person. She has been pushing for, I don't know if it's NCT or Bump and Baby, but all of these classes to talk more about postnatal bodies, like what happens to the vagina. Yeah. The fact that you shouldn't be loading up, you know, we're all so excited to get our baby carriers on and carry our babies around. And she was like, you are not giving your pelvic floor a chance to rest. Like, you are essentially carrying a weight on your body. Like, sit down, don't go for the walk, like heal. And
you know what the consequence of that is? The consequence, if you don't, prolapse. You can get
I had prolapse. I had anal prolapse, and I talk about it a lot, and it was traumatic because I was just not prepared. I remember being excited to give birth because I was like, now I finally know the mystery of what happens to a woman's vagina. Because like everyone, when you give birth, I feel like there's a standard procedure now that you document your pregnancy, not everyone, but online document, pregnant, you go under. There's like a social media blackout for a week or two. And then you emerge out the other side with a beautiful picture of you and your baby. And you might talk a bit about the birth, but it's normally they weighed this, I'm so in love. And I was like, but what about your body? Like, what is your vagina doing?
Interesting. I never thought about that before. That must be really scary if you're watching that and you're like, what happens?
I was fascinated. I was like, yeah, but how is your vagina? What is that? Like, yes, I'm glad the baby's here and healthy, but like, I want to know, my vagina went up to 10 centimeters and now it's
like, this. How is it now?
And I was like, but why is no one talking about
how
the
is
body? Yeah. Do you still have piles? Which, by the way, I still have piles a year later.
Yeah, I got piles. I talked about that on my made a documentary called Sherry Has a Baby. And I remember always saying, and this is something I was just joking with my friends, I'd always go, for the love of God, just anything except piles. Anything but piles. They sound so gross. Oh my God, they sound so gross. What's the first thing I get? Fucking piles. I carried a chest of drawers. I was helping someone move house, because I'm a dick. And they were like, no, I was more there for moral support and help. But I'm really impatient. And someone was making a right song and dance of taking this little side table down the stairs. I was like, oh, for God's sake. So I carried it downstairs. And I was like, oh, that wasn't good. And I got piles. And so I just had to talk about it on the TV, because I just felt like it was an honest, it was a piece of honesty there. But they're really, really common.
So I didn't do NCT, but I did an episode a couple of weeks ago with Natalie Rushdie. And she said that in NCT, when they talk about what happens in birth or after briefly, they send the men out for a coffee. And I was like, they need to know. Like, they really need to know. Like, also, I was making Tom check my stitches because I was like, is my vagina still there? Is it attached? Like, what is going on down there? Can someone please tell me? And like, I don't, like Marta said, they're just not interested in including that in NCT. And I don't know if it's like the prudishness or the shame and taboo around sex in our society, which, you know, we've covered with single mothers and shame and all of this shit. Teach us about our bodies.
And teach the men alongside it, because if you miss that opportunity for them to sit, and it might be awkward for some, but if you include it in a relaxed way, in a relaxed tone, what people hear is, this is nothing to be ashamed of. This is nothing to be nervous of. If you make the men go out for whiskey and cigars, what you are saying to them is, this is women's problem and it's mucky and secret. That's what you're saying.
And I think then that puts more pressure on people when they aren't ready to have sex. Because we, for whatever reason, we have this like archaic caveman idea that if we don't have sex with a man after birth, that he'll leave us or whatever it is. And I remember saying to Tom, like, oh, I'm just not ready for sex. And he was like, do you know, I think I'm terrified. I'm not ready. And I was like, oh, I hadn't really thought about you. I just presumed that you were like the caveman with your stick, like waiting.
Give me your body.
Hell no, I do not want to have sex with you.
Of course, that's interesting. I've never thought about that. But of course it must be scary, because you know that your partners have been hurt. You don't know how that's, I mean, that's, yeah. What's going to happen? The other stitches.
And also with alongside the education, if the partner is breastfeeding, they need to know that there is absolutely no natural lubrication. I feel like that should be number one in the sex ed.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, because the estrogen change, there is literally no, like, it's like a doll.
I mean, why? Why do we get taught how to put on a nappy when you can Google it? And yet you don't know that. Oh my God. I think because I wasn't breastfeeding, I didn't experience that. But I mean, that's a relatively large piece of information that we should be told.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite intense, isn't it? So anyway, there are amazing people campaigning or pushing for these classes, the pregnancy classes, preparation classes, to include more about postnatal. So if you're listening to this and you're doing classes, keep pushing. Be like, what happens to the vagina? Be the disruptive person. That's like, what about prolapses?
I want to talk about piles and lube.
Anyway, I could talk for so long, but I'm so conscious of, you know, time is precious as a mom and for people listening as well. So I've actually loved chatting to you, Cherry. It was amazing. I feel like I didn't cover half of what I wanted to, but so much of what, like, it was great. I loved it.
Thank you so much for having me on. You brought so many fantastic points. I could have talked to you forever. Such a delight to be on and chat to you.
Thank you so much. And if you do have any questions or any comments about today's episode, then please, please remember to get in touch by emailing askmumsthewordpod@gmail.com. And you can leave a voicemail or a voice note, I suppose it is, on WhatsApp. The number is 075-999-27537. And of course, you can leave it as a review on Apple Podcasts as well. And if you are on Apple Podcasts, I feel like such a YouTuber every time I say this, but please leave us a review and a 5-star rating, follow and subscribe. But mainly, I just hope that you're enjoying it. And if you think someone would enjoy this episode, then please tell them about it. And I'll be back same time, same place next week.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.